This presentation always makes me laugh when we came up with it. A woman's work is never done. And I just have this vision of Lucille Ball, you know, she's black and white there with Ethel, and it's never done. And I don't know why that image always comes to mind, but they probably face some of the barriers for physical activity that we found that women today face, but we probably have a few more challenges as well, like not the nanny in the pocket to take care of the child, and definitely probably not as much chocolate as she had to keep her going. I, again, have nothing interesting to disclose. Other than I have some of my illustrious colleagues here with me today, including April Keipel and Elizabeth Siemens. This work is done in part with them and a great group of folks, including partners at the University of Montana-Missoula, at Montana State University Billings, with Riverstone Health, our City County Health Department, Community Health Center Residency, Health Department on Steroids Extraordinaire, as well as St. Vincent Healthcare, for whom I work, and St. Vincent Healthcare Foundation. You'll see this logo in the bottom right-hand corner, Healthy by Design. All this work is done through the community coalition that we call Healthy by Design. It's not a separate 501c3. It's a loosely knit coalition of people with a few backbone organizations that ensure the work keeps moving forward, but lots of community partners as well. This particular research project was funded by an application via that Healthy by Design coalition that was funded by the Office on Women's Health. Our objectives are pretty straightforward. We are going to discover three gender-based constraints related to physical activity and three gender-based opportunities as well. So we'll start with a little definition or distinctions that are kind of foundational to this work. That's the distinction between sex and gender, and probably everybody in this room already knows this, but it was important for all of us at a community level to really understand that true distinction, sex being those biological characteristics, and gender, again, being those socially constructed norms and behaviors. And it wasn't a concept that we'd talked a lot about in our community health improvement work with coalition partners. So this was a bit of a learning curve for us to explore these issues pretty distinctly. Another distinction in terms is the notion of physical activity versus exercise. When we use the word exercise, we get a lot of pushback really fast. So it was important for us to think more along those lines of physical activity, not that rigorous structure exercise that often in people's minds make them think immediately of going to the gym and working out, but the notion of physical activity that is things that you're already doing every day, what makes your body move and requires your muscles to go. Getting back to that sex versus gender piece, as we worked with our community partners, we use this model a lot to help frame that, again, that inner circle being those biological factors, that sex, but really getting out to that outer ring of what does it mean to be male, what does it mean to be female, what are the expectations that society has of those roles. As I mentioned, this opportunity for a little bit deeper research through some funding from the Office on Women's Health came at a great time for us. We'd been looking at the notion of physical activity and wanting to increase it in our community with our coalition partners, and we're delighted to have the opportunity to apply for some funding. We were one of 16 coalitions around the country to be supported by the Office on Women's Health Coalition for a Healthier Community Grant Project. That was delightful for us, and the grant purpose really was to implement evidence-based health interventions through the public health systems approach that was gender-based, cost-beneficial, sustainable, and addressed identified community health issues that adversely affected the health of the women in our community. I always laugh at that word, sustainable. Here's your grant dollars. Make it sustainable. I'm sure none of you, yeah, that. probably, again, many of you are familiar with the Office on Women's Health. We found them a great resource for us in this project and in general, really to increase our knowledge base for other health improvement work that we were doing in our community. Our website offered us a variety of tools that really helped advance this work. I mentioned that this is coalition work. Here's kind of a look at our coalition structure. That top box is the alliance, and that's a formal partnership between two very competitive hospitals in our marketplace. We really battle for 50-50 market share. The third partner in that alliance is our city-county health department. We have a memorandum of agreement between the CEOs and the institutions that we will work together on projects that can significantly improve the health of our community. And important in that memorandum was also a special emphasis on underserved populations. So that's kind of the frame that we use to get started. That alliance has been responsible for funding our community health needs assessment process. And we've been doing that together in partnership and part paid and working through all the prioritization together for a number of years. 1994 was one that we had. In 2006, we had a strong assessment. In 2011, we're in the throes of another one right now, now that the IRS has mandated the three-year cycle for tax-exempt hospitals. So we're doing them more frequently now, but we do have a rich history of working on this, and I think that's part of the foundation that led us to evolve our coalition pretty significantly. These orange boxes are the current structure of our work groups, but as any of you know who've worked with coalitions, the people come and go, the projects come and go, and it's really a flexible model of addressing work versus something that's inside an institution. Along the bottom, again, are a number of our partners in this work. You can see the hospital partners, university, YMCA is working with the Montana Migrant Council, Adult Resource Alliance, some faith-based organizations, some organizations specifically outreaching to American Indian women. So it's a really a diverse group of coalition partners. That's us in Montana. A little box is Yellowstone County. We really defined the scope of our work in along a geographic boundary, and that's our county of Yellowstone. It has a population, I'm sorry, its square miles are about 2,635. That's roughly the size of D.C. and Delaware combined. And if you look at corner to corner across our state, if you were driving from edge to edge, it would be the D.C. to Chicago trip. Basically is the size of our state. So our coalition work, again, is boundaried in Yellowstone County, but because we are the urban hub of the state, there are a lot of ripple effects that move out beyond our county. We have a few more women than men in our county, but we're talking a scope of about 72,000 women. We are not terribly diverse in the makeup of our community. Just a little over 5% Hispanic and 4% American Indian, but we are a predominantly Caucasian group. So I mentioned we've been working through the health assessment work for a number of years together and had been on a frame to keep thinking about policy, system, and environmental change strategies to really help us get to what we feel is like our number one community health need, and that was related to trying to reach a healthy weight status. Our weight had been growing at twice the national average in terms of people who were overweight and obese, and it was kind of the lens that we already had somewhat going into this work, but we found a number of other things that emerged through our needs assessment. We wanted to take it through another level. Again, we'd been working together. We wanted to take it deeper, more meaningful. What else are we missing as we approach this work? So we were really excited to put a gender analysis lens on top of this work that we'd already been doing. But we had to learn all about it again. So the three steps that we took in that assessment was, again, looking at the data, sex desegregated, quantitative, to try to figure out what patterns existed, what were the different responses for men and women, and then thinking about why these patterns exist. That really was a lot of that gender lens, asking why is it this way. And then we looked at, again, the how those factors really constrain or could support women's health. The way that we collected our data was we paid someone else to collect it. We contracted with PRC, Professional Research Consultants, and they did a telephone survey to 400 households in Yellowstone County. Sample size weighted in proportion to the actual population distribution at the zip code level. And for statistical purposes, for all you researchers out there, the maximum rate of error associated with the sample size of 400 respondents is plus or minus 4.9% at the 95% level of confidence. I'm getting a thumbs up from my evaluator. One of the things we found looking at the data was a big discrepancy between leisure time physical activity between men and women. And this was, again, looking at the last 30 days of how active people had been. And about 30% of women reported zero leisure time physical activity. That was a little startling to us. None? Nothing in your leisure time? We noticed, again, that low-income and senior individuals were also a little bit higher in that piece. But the analysis wasn't done using sex-desegregated data while also looking at those factors. So once we knew the what, we really wanted to narrow in on that, on the why. And so we did that through more qualitative analysis. We conducted a number of focus groups, 13 altogether. Dear April over here transcribed every single one of them. Very painstaking process. But we had different groups of focus, different groups of people that came together for those focus groups. We wanted to target, again, especially minority populations, working with our Hispanic-speaking Montana Migrant Council clients. They were a great focus group for us, working with teenagers, with new mothers, with low-income women, with active seniors, with social service providers. And we had a men's group as well. Again, just men, to check out that lens as well. And occasionally we had men filter into some of the other groups of women. We asked them specifically about these things, what roles were, expectations, what their responsibilities were, activities, environment, and resources. I think we worked through a number of questions in those assessments, and it was maybe a little surprising how some of those results came back, and in some ways maybe not so surprising. I think one of the surprising themes was that the responses seemed tended to be very similar group to group, despite the variety of the participants that we had. We'll talk first about the gender-based constraints that came out loud and through our focused groups. Oh, okay. Isn't that cute? Good job. Holly Homemaker there, that might almost look like Ethel. In that first little picture that popped up in that bottom left-hand corner, you can see a mom taking care of a young child. And again, that was one of those key pieces that came out, women's caretaking roles. They really felt the need, and their responsibility is to take care of other people, whether it's children or parents, and women often put taking care of themselves behind taking care of other people. You're nodding your heads. It's probably not too surprising on that. Women also reported feeling like housework and chores were mostly their responsibility in the household. They also had less physical hobbies and interests, perhaps, than their male counterparts who had leisure time and maybe would take on a sport or something that would be a little more active. Women's hobbies were more sedentary, reading, knitting. If I get a minute to myself, I just want to sit down and be still, was what we heard from women. There was also some gender-based expectations around appearance. Women felt that they needed to look good. We heard that a lot from women in the workforce as well. It's not okay if I take a lunch break and go get exercise because it takes me 2 hours to put myself, it would be a 2-hour trip to go work out and get myself back together for work. Or I would be a bit ostracized if I didn't have a chance to shower and clean up again. And even time in the morning, again, women didn't feel comfortable going out in their sweats in front of strangers either. They really had some of those appearance pieces. Especially women in poverty reported that there was just no time. They're working more than one job, caretaking for children, and that time constraint just wasn't there. It wasn't left to spend. There were also women who reported concerns with their physical safety. Again, just being out alone or trying to recreate individually had some barriers for them. We then spent some time trying to understand what the opportunities might be. Love those girls in their hat. Doesn't it just be fun to go hang out and swim with them? That's one of the things that came out strong to us, is that women really enjoyed activities where they could be social, when they could be with other women. That would be something that would support their decision to be more active, if we could do it with others. That the flip side of that caregiving role as well, having to take care of everyone else, women felt a sense that they needed to ensure that their children were active. Again, in that caregiver role, that's one potential support for women. They have to ensure their kids are active, so it might support them in being active too. Plus, as that caregiver, they somewhat felt a responsibility to model good behavior for their children, again, which could be another opportunity to engage them in more activity. Pets also came up. We live in Montana. We have a lot of pets. We have a lot of land. We take dogs for a walk frequently. So that emerged also strongly in our focus groups, that being almost forced to get out and be active by caregiving for a pet was another great opportunity for women to be that. One interesting note, there were not many differences between the responses from young women and old women, from the teenagers that we survey to our most senior populations. From all that work in the assessment, looking deeply at those gender-based constraints, and those gender-based supports, we use that to put together an intervention for women in our county. We launched that intervention just about a year ago in a couple of different pieces and parts. It's not the focus of what we wanted to talk about today, but I want to tell you just a little bit about that. One of the legs of the intervention is a social class, a group where women get together and talk about barriers to physical activity in their lives. They're doing it in a social setting. They're doing it without exercising. And we laugh very often calling it, it's the exercise class where you don't exercise. You just sit around and talk about exercising. And I can probably say that here. Talk about it here in Boston. So that's been a great start to that intervention piece. We've had one cycle of women go through, again, being able to partner with each other, think about some of those challenges, network with each other about overcoming some of those challenges, and just starting our second group with that. The other part of that intervention is a social media campaign that's just getting ready to launch, again focusing on that notion of physical activity versus exercise. We know that we need to change the mindset of women that being active is not about scheduling an hour at the gym to work out. It's about taking what activity you're already doing in your everyday life and enhancing it, kicking it up a level. If you're bringing in groceries from the car, carry in one bag at a time, back and forth. So we're really excited with the production of a couple of video spots, radio advertising that's getting ready to launch too, and our website, healthybydesignyellowstone.org, is where you can find additional information about both the research side and the actual intervention work that's underway, as well as learn a little bit more about Yellowstone County. Again, it's really our hope that we can change women's perspectives about what counts as physical activity and address some of those gender barriers so that we can move that needle on women reporting physical activity in their leisure time.